Second case today is United States versus Brown. This is a government appeal, so the government will go first. Actually, I didn't say this explicitly the first time, but the court will entertain oral motions for additional time to consult with counsel at table if necessary. Government prepared to argue?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
The appellee?
Yes, Your Honor.
The government may argue.
Chief Judge Stuckey, members of the court, good morning. May it please the court. My name is Nick Gannon, and I, with Lieutenant Jennifer Joseph, represent the United States. Chief Judge Stuckey, the government respectfully requests permission to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. This court should vacate the lower court's ruling and dismiss the writ because a court of criminal appeals cannot find potential jurisdiction where an accused sentence is sub-jurisdictional for purposes of Article 66B. An accused has not made a petition for review under Article 69B, and the JAG has never ordered review under Article 69 Delta. As this court is aware, courts of criminal appeal are Article I courts that are courts of statutory creation. And as such, one must first look to the statute to assess the jurisdictional potential for a court of criminal appeals. Here, the relevant statute that we should look to is Article 66 of the Uniform Code of Military Justice and Article 69 of the Uniform Code of Military Justice. Under Article 66B of the UCMJ, the record in each trial by court-martial in which a sentence as approved extends to death, dismissal, a dishonorable or bad conduct discharge, or at the time of First Sergeant Brown's court-martial, confinement of 1 year or more, shall be reviewed again under Article 66B. Here, the accused sentence at his special court-martial consisted of reduction of 1 grade. As such, the jurisdictional potential under Article 66B was extinguished upon the award of a sub-jurisdictional sentence. Of course, we must also look to Article 69 for jurisdiction potential. Under Article 69, this court found in United States versus Arnett that in analyzing the provisions related to the germane provision, Article 69 Delta, that one, the JAG can cause review in any court-martial which is A, subject to an action by the Judge Advocate General under this section, and B, where the Court of Criminal Appeals, or at, it is sent to the Court of Criminal Appeals by order of the JAG. The important part there to focus on is the conjunctive. As this court noted in United States versus Arnett, that conjunctive matters. The case must be sent by the JAG in order to begin the jurisdictional hook residence in Article 69 Delta.
When the provision, and I can't remember whether, I think it's in D, but the provision says the accused can petition for the thing to be sent. If the accused petitions and the petition is pending, what's the jurisdictional situation?
The government believes that if the accused has filed a timely, compliant petition under 69 Bravo, which enables the accused to do that, then there would be potential jurisdiction under Article 69.
Well, does the TJ still have to act? You've got a petition.
Yes, Your Honor.
Which presumably the TJ has to do something with.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is it the government's position basically that there's potential jurisdiction while this thing's pending, but if the TJ kicks it over, then of course there's jurisdiction under Arnett?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. If the TJ says no, does that extinguish potential jurisdiction?
So, Your Honor, subpart Article 69 Delta B2 also qualifies as indicates specifically that any action taken by the JAG under this section, the government reads that provision that the CCAs could review that as well.
Okay. Any action taken by the TJAG under 69,
it would appear based on the statute to create jurisdictional review by the CCA because it is, it does appear to be very broad, any action taken by the JAG under this provision.
But that's not the case.
No, Your Honor, it is not. So the government's request here is simply that this honorable court look at what has happened in United States versus Brown at the special court martial level and note that a sub-jurisdictional sentence was awarded and therefore closing the door to potential jurisdiction under 66B. And, of course, Chief Judge Stuckey, as you just noted, the JAG had never sent the case under 69 Delta. As such, there can be no potential for jurisdiction under 69 specifically where there has been no action by the JAG, and in this case, no action by the accused. There's been no preliminary step. As Judge Baker noted in his concurrence in Arness, quote, the two prongs are to be read together in that they are conjunctive, and they are subject to the TJAG under Article 69. Specifically, that there is a, quote, jurisdictional trigger controlled by the TJAG. That jurisdictional trigger is a jurisdiction creation event. In other words, no potential jurisdiction can lie where an individual actor, in this case the JAG, has to take an action in order to create that jurisdiction. Because Article 69 is predicated as the JAG may do X, Y, or Z in furtherance of review of the case, and Article 66B is phrased as the CCA shall review all qualifying cases. There's the government's position is that there's a significant delta or distinction between those two jurisdictional hooks, resident in the statute, and of course, as I indicated earlier, the first stop on the analytical train has got to be the statute. So the shall language in Article 66 appears to be very expansive if there is a jurisdictional sentence. Of course, we saw that in several cases. We've seen that for the potential for a qualifying sentence, I should say, not necessarily a qualifying sentence, but the potential for a qualifying sentence. And that potential under 66 is still alive when a qualifying sentence could be adjudged. Once one is not, the door is closed. Very different from the may language in Article 69.
So is that what your position is that you're not taking issue with the notion of potential jurisdiction writ large? You're saying that, hey, look, all of our cases that suggest we are using a potential jurisdiction, or the CCA is, they're different from this case, because those are cases where, like Kestenberger, Powell, where you really hadn't, some of those cases, you didn't have any sentence at all, because the writ was pursued pre-trial. And in Hal's case, I guess the writ was pursued while the convening authority was about to act, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And I guess from your point of view, you're saying, hey, look, that's all fine and good, but this is a case where you're beginning with a sentence that is sub-jurisdictional, and therefore this makes this case much different from those others because there's no real speculation, shall we say, I hate to use that word, about what sentence will be adjudged, whether it be jurisdictional or sub-jurisdictional. Does that sound like what you're...
Yes, Your Honor. The government concurs with your summation of the case law. For example, in Powell had received a 9-year jurisdictionally sound sentence. Now, granted, as you indicated, Your Honor, it was pre-convening authority's action, but the path to potential jurisdiction under 66B was alive and well because in Howell it was a 9-year qualifying sentence.
So it was already set, so to speak.
Yes, Your Honor, it was. But even in a case where there has not been a qualifying sentence, in other words, the government's position is that the charge sheet alone can create potential jurisdiction under Article 66 as long as the charge sheet could result in a jurisdictional sentence that meets the statutory requirements of Article 66.
And that's a Kestenberger kind of situation?
Kestenberger is an Article 120 case, and as such, the charge sheet could have produced a jurisdictionally qualifying sentence.
Mm-hmm.
The real sort of, in the government's estimation, so your core question, Your Honor, was Is the United States challenging the concept, the propriety, the existence of potential jurisdiction? And the answer, respectfully, to Your Honor, is absolutely not. Mm-hmm. We are not. However, in to make it very, very brief on this one point, the CCA, the lower court, went too far insofar as they relied in any way, shape, or form on Article 69. They went too far, and they exceeded the notion of what potential jurisdiction is.
Here in Article 69, does it say that the word may is different from the word potential?
No, I'm so sorry. Mr. Gray,
where in Article 69D does it say that the word may is different from the possibility of a potential?
It doesn't, Your Honor. It doesn't say that explicitly.
Right?
It does not. However, when one reads United States versus Arnett, it appears that this honorable court came to the conclusion that there is a jurisdictional trigger that is created by, or that is controlled by the JAG. And therefore, there can be no potential if the JAG has not acted.
In Arnett, did the court say that, or did the court use past tense in describing what did or did not happen in that case?
So Your Honor, the court, the majority opinion used the past tense in saying, in indicating that it was a Article 76 complete review process. However, Judge Baker in his concurrence summarized, understanding it's a concurrence, but seemed to capture the essence of the opinion, which is that there is a jurisdictional trigger, quote, controlled by the JAG.
Colonel, can I ask you this? It's a hypothetical. Now, suppose that, not this accused, but an accused reaches a point where this accused has come in his case, and he wants to complain about, like this case, the bias of the military judge. And there's a whole lot of evidence that might suggest that that's the case. But instead of doing anything, he goes and lets the convening authority do his thing, and then he submits his application to the JAG under Article 69, and the TJAG says, no, we don't see it, you get no relief. Now, is that the end of the case for the accused, or is that an action that can be reviewed by the CCA at that point?
Your Honor, under the broadest reading of Article 69 Delta, the second prong, where, quote, any action taken by the Judge Advocate General under this section in such case, that would appear to give the CCA the ability to review that, Your Honor.
Okay, but it would require the TJAG to submit the case to the CCA, right?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor.
All right. So in that situation, had the accused taken that route, well, there would be potential jurisdiction. He wouldn't have to wait. Because I thought I heard you earlier tell us that if he had already made his application, but action was pending, there might be potential jurisdiction.
Yes, Your Honor.
But that's all I needed to get
to. Yes, Your Honor. Yeah. Sorry for talking over you, Your Honor.
No. I'm not talking well, so talking over me is a good thing.
No, Your Honor, I respectfully disagree. The government put forth the In Re Tenet D.C. Court of Appeals case to try to give, just to try to allude to or identify a potential structure that this honorable court could look to for at least some guidance in trying to put some left and right lateral limits on what potential jurisdiction is. Because as we know from the Supreme Court precedent, Your Honor, potential jurisdiction is a thing, and the government, again, is not challenging that. However, it is not an unlimited power, as we all know. It's axiomatic that the All Writs Act, of course, does not expand an appellate court's existing jurisdiction, and they have to, the writ that may be issued under the All Writs Act has to be, quote, in aid of that jurisdiction. So if we look at cases like McCall v. Carlin, Roche Aero Transport, Dean Foods, the Supreme Court precedent that at least speaks to this notion of potential jurisdiction. As we relate to those in our brief, one of the key factors or components of those cases that we would beg this honorable court to consider is that in all of those cases, the notion of potential jurisdiction is exempt to protect an appellate court's jurisdiction from some events that may defeat that court's jurisdiction down the line, particularly some action at the lower court level. For example, in United States versus Booker, we had a situation where the lower court in an Article 120 sexual assault case found at the trial level that the maximum sentence the accused would be exposed to would amount to, in essence, a summary court-martial sentence of reduction in 30 days in the brig. In Booker, there was the United States made petition in Booker because, again, that's the perfect example in the government's estimation of the use, scope, and nature of potential jurisdiction, in that the appellate court found that the lower court had taken an action by drastically reducing the punitive exposure of the accused. The lower court had taken an action that would, quote, defeat the jurisdiction of the CCA and this honorable court down the line. That's a wholly appropriate use of potential jurisdiction. What is not is hyper-attenuated, exceptionally speculative, having to go and navigate narrows of this decision and that possibility and maybe here and maybe there to find potential jurisdiction either under 66B or, again, as we've said several times, where the JAG must act.
So I know you're getting low on time, and I hope the Chief Judge will bear with the both of us. But,
yes, Your Honor.
Back to my hypothetical, which is kind of would be kind of like our next. Suppose, in my hypothetical, the accused had gone the route of submitting his application to the JAG on this issue of bias on the part of the military judge, and the PJAG had said no relief, and I'm not going to send it to the CCA, which is kind of what happened in our next, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
The PJAG said no relief, and that's basically the end of the road.
Yes, Your Honor.
I guess what worries me is that what if you have a case where some significant issue, like the bias on the part of a military judge, or some other fairly significant issue is raised during the course of the trial or afterwards, and if the accused is required to go to TJAG under Article 69, and he gets no relief, and the TJAG decides he or she is not going to submit the case to the CCA, it strikes me that that's a denial of a judicial review of a fairly significant issue. I mean, is that just the way it is? Or?
So, Your Honor, the government could take that tack, as Congress, of course, has created this structure through the assignment of the potential jurisdiction to a CCA. So we could take that course. As the government sits here today, Your Honor, I don't believe the case law is clear enough to give you a definitive answer to your query. Respectfully, Your Honor. It depends on what this honorable court decides to term any action by the JAG.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the type of left and lateral limits that we are looking for to give clarity to the CCAs and to the litigants in order to understand what their obligations, their potential, and what's the application process. Particularly, Your Honor, and I'll be extremely brief, particularly I believe your question is prescient insofar as the current construct of Article 69. Of course, there was a different nature that Article 69 was different at the time of First Sergeant Brown's court-martial than it is today.
I'm sure.
And so it's a much more petition-based system today, Your Honor. So,
Judge, I have the indulgence to ask a question, even though time has expired. In the scenario posed by Judge Sparks, would the appellant have the ability to go to U.S. District Court?
I believe no, Your Honor. If this honorable court was to say that any action was reviewable by a CCA. In other words, the district court would properly analyze what remedies are available within our system and whether or not the accused has availed herself to those remedies. And if the remedy was available, the answer to your question, Your Honor, is probably no. If there was no remedy available, then the answer to your question is possibly.
Chief Judge, may I have a minute or two? If the issues in this case had arisen prior to the sentence and a writ was filed with the CCA, would the CCA have jurisdiction?
Yes, Your Honor. The Article 66 Bravo prong for potential jurisdiction, because First Sergeant Brown's charge sheet, which was an abusive sexual contact specification, could generate a jurisdictionally qualifying sentence. Up until the moment that sentence was announced, that was sub-jurisdictional, potential jurisdiction exists, Your Honor.
If the issue arose after the sentence was announced, and it was the government, not the accused, contending that the judge had so departed from the ordinary course of judicial propriety that the judge had lost his or her impartiality, could the government then get a writ?
On the exact facts of this case, that would be a much tougher jurisdictional row, because, again, our position is under Article 69, there can be no potential jurisdiction until the JAG acts under the regime in place at the time of First Sergeant Brown's court-martial.
But if the case turns out to be one in which the accused doesn't seek relief, maybe because the case turned out well for the accused, then the government has no remedy whatsoever with the same exact facts that took place before sentence, now taking place after sentence. The judge has lost, allegedly, his or her impartiality, and the government can get no relief from the CCA in the government's view.
Your Honor, assuming that there's no Article 62 qualifying government appeal capability there, that the normal mechanisms are not alive and well, the government's position is, irrespective of the petitioner of extraordinary potential jurisdiction, based on these facts in this case, at this moment in First Sergeant Brown's court-martial, there was no potential under 69.
And last one, if I may. After the sentence is announced, same case that we have now, we have one hypothetical. We have a witness. The witness is claiming that the court is going to be presented with evidence that violates the witness's rights under Military Rule of Evidence 513, the psychotherapist-patient privilege,
yes, sir,
type of issue that came up in LRM. But now it's after the sentence has been announced. Does the witness at that point have no remedy? That is, the court is going to expose to the world all the information in the psychotherapist-patient privilege. And as I understand the government's argument, this idea of potential jurisdiction is a light switch. You turn it on before the sentence, you turn it off after the sentence, you turn it on later on under Article 69. But right now, how does that help the witness in this case whose private personal information and psychiatric privilege is going to be spread in front of the whole?
Your Honor, the government has been focused in our discussion to this point on 66 and 69 because of the individuals seeking the potential jurisdiction. As indicated earlier, Your Honor, and as this Court is aware, the first stop on the analytical train of potential jurisdiction is the statute. In the hypothetical that Your Honor has posed, Article 6B, as was analyzed in LRM, Article 6B could be a source of statutory potential
Article jurisdiction. Article 6B would not be a source in terms of a non-victim witness. 513 is not a victim-limited rule. It applies to any person, the accused, any other witness. So let's assume there's no 6B way to get to the CCA. Why would the CCA not be able to say this case has the potential of coming to us?
Yes, Your Honor.
Because there is a sentence in the case. Therefore, why can't the CCA take a look at that case and decide whether the witness has a good case or not for relief?
I apologize earlier. I thought your hypothetical was a victim.
Yeah, I understand. No apology needed because it's typically thought of in that way.
Your Honor, there's just no statutory construction here that would answer the hypothetical you pose. And it's important because the Congress has created this structure, and so while that may seem to be problematic theoretically, again, we have to look at the statute because, again, the doctrine is that these are limited courts of limited jurisdiction, and expansive jurisdiction it doesn't comport with the statutory structure, Your Honor. That would have to be answered by some sort of statute or, of course, precedent from this honorable court in order to get, as far as the government's estimation is concerned, based on the four corners of your hypothetical.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Counsel for the appellee. Good morning, Chief Judge Duffy, members of the court, and may it please the court. My name is Lieutenant Michael Lester, and I represent First Sergeant Brown. For two reasons, this court should affirm the lower court's decision. First, the lower court correctly determined that this is an ongoing court-martial where no appeal is pending, but an appeal of the case may later be perfected. And two, the lower court also correctly determined that the issue of the writ, a biased military judge, has the potential to directly affect the findings and sentence of this court-martial. Thus, the lower court correctly determined that the All Writs Act empowered it with jurisdiction to entertain the petition for extraordinary relief. As the lower court stated, the government is putting the cart before the horse. Appellate jurisdiction is tied to approved findings of sentence in both Article 66 and 67. We don't have approved findings of sentence in this court because the convening authority apparently took issue with the findings and directed a post-trial session, as is his right. He ordered the military judge to reconsider three trial rulings that could have the potential to affect the findings. If the government wants this court now to rule that there can be no appellate jurisdiction, my colleague said it's extinguished, in fact, even while the parties are awaiting rulings in a post-trial session, and where the rulings could have a drastic implication on the court-martial. This rule that the government is proposing is not only at odds with Article 66 and 67, but also the Supreme Court and the Southern Court.
There's a discussion. They keep saying, well, there could be a mistrial. Well, a mistrial doesn't get you anywhere. It's a mistrial's not a continuation of court-martial. A mistrial results in a wholly new proceeding. So where's that get you?
Your Honor, a mistrial is a continuation. The charges simply get withdrawn, and the case proceeds anew.
It's a new proceeding. It's not the same proceeding. The charges and specs may be the same, but it starts with a wholly new trial.
And even if that were the case, Your Honor, there's still the possibility for the case to be heard on 69 reviews, as court has already been saying. And I think there...
How is this not Arness, except that in Arness, the TJAG said no, and here the TJAG is silent, at least thus far. But, of course, no petition has been filed with the TJAG either. So why isn't this Arness or son of Arness?
In a number of ways, Your Honor, it's not like Arness. So first, the nature of the writ itself. So we're dealing in Arness with quorum nobis, which presupposes that the lower court, the CCA in that case, exercised jurisdiction in the case in the first place. It hadn't done so, so the writ didn't even have application by its own terms. The second matter was not only did Arness petition the TJAG said no, but the convictions became final, and so there was no avenue to statutory relief in that case. That tracks closely with the Supreme Court's note in Noyd v. Bond, where the court said that an appellate court in the military system has jurisdiction under the All Writs Act where the case may later be reviewed by the court. In Arness, that was not possible because the convictions were final. There was no statutory time. That also tracks the second sentence in the way.
Well, if TJAG action is the statutory trigger, and it seems to be, and that seems to be what we said in Arness, and there isn't any TJAG action, why doesn't that end the matter?
Your Honor, again, it goes back to what the Supreme Court has held. I mean, the idea of potential jurisdiction
The idea of potential jurisdiction in cases like Dean Foods has only very limited relevance to a criminal action at court-martial, given the statutorily confined jurisdiction of the CCAs, and for that matter, us. So where's that leave you?
Your Honor, it's the potential jurisdiction with respect, Your Honor. I don't think FTC stands for the proposition that Your Honor says. It's where, as now Chief Justice Roberts wrote in the tenet, where a lower court proceeding has taken place, you know, and an appeal may later be heard, regardless of how prospective or potential that may be, it makes sense for the case to be seen and considered as being within the appellate jurisdiction of the court.
Just because this court is an Article I court and just because the CCA is the same, there's no analysis in any case, not in the cases that I've cited, not in the Supreme Court, not even in this court's own prior decisions. Arnest did not stand for the proposition that there's an on-off button, as Tina Zedefron put it, with regard to potential jurisdiction. There either is there potential jurisdiction or there isn't. It's a novel position.
There either is or there isn't?
There either is potential jurisdiction or there isn't.
And what determines that?
Whether the case may ultimately be reviewed by the CCA or this court.
Well, that's pretty circular, because the statute says whether the case may ultimately be reviewed. Arnest relied on the statute, and so I don't know where that gets you.
Your Honor, in this way, I'm talking about there's no potential jurisdiction. So the statute,
well, it's a woulda, coulda, shoulda thing. If this domino falls and that domino falls, this other domino falls, well, maybe we can get there. But that's not a very convincing basis for jurisdiction.
Your Honor, it's not as speculative, I think, as a hypothetical consists of. We do have, in this case, a military judge who's on the record admitted that it made him uncomfortable to preside over a hearing in the case. That signaled a red flag to the petitioner to ask the higher court to remove the judge from the case. So I don't think it's we're dealing with the hypothetical, as my colleague put it in his brief, that, you know, for a want of a nail situation. We have a serious problem with this court martial right now.
Well, and did they ask the judge to recuse himself?
They sure did, Your Honor.
Okay.
And he refused to
do so.
Okay. And he refused to do so. And so, without getting too much into the merits there, the point is, the petitioner did, as Judge Barsh mentioned, he acted at the time that the MTM allows him to do so. And the convening authority, just to back up a little bit, he acted at the time before the convening authority acted on the finding of the sentence. The convening authority apparently wanted a resolution of these issues, but there's no way that he wanted that in front of a biased judge. And so what's the petitioner supposed to do here? I mean, the petitioner has rights. And simply because his sentence doesn't entitle him to automatic review, there's nothing in the case law, there's nothing that this court has held that says that he can't do this.
But when you're saying there's nothing out there, let's say you have a very good argument, but the government has a very good argument. Isn't there a general principle, though, that statutory jurisdiction for Article I courts should be read narrowly? And so shouldn't that be our default position?
No, Your Honor, respectfully, in this sense. The All Writs Act applies to Article I courts the same way as Article III courts. And Congress passed a statute to deal with a situation like this, to give appellate jurisdiction in a situation like this. If this court does consider the legislative history that my colleague has brought in, in 1989, Congress in the committee report stated that there is a problem right now, which is that the majority of the courts martial cannot get appellate review in our system. So the idea was to enact Article 69 Delta to allow cases that can have important issues like this one, which don't get that automatic review. So I do think, Your Honor, that demonstrates Congress's intent, even if we are in the context of an Article I court, to allow jurisdiction of these issues. Sure, it's discretionary jurisdiction, but the All Writs Act allows extraordinary relief, even in cases that, such as this one, which there's no guarantee to be in direct review of.
On that specific point, suppose that we agree with you that, in general, the All Writs Act allows a court to issue an extraordinary writ whenever there's a potential for a case to get to the court. And in this case, there is a potential because they could go through 69 if it was sent by the TJ. But I think in Part 7 of the government's brief, the seventh argument, they seem to say that, well, those general rules don't apply because there's a special statutory scheme created in Article 69 that kind of takes us out of the ordinary application of the All Writs Act. So, again, we agree with you, if we were to agree with you, that there is a potential way to get here, and when there's a potential way, the All Writs Act says you can issue a writ. But I think the government's point is that there's a specific statutory regime that Congress looked at and said, this is how we want those particular cases to get to the Court of Appeals. What's your answer to the government's point?
My answer to the government's point, Your Honor, is that supports our view that there are cases that are important that can get that discretionary review. even if it's not automatically assumed to be the case. It could have been for a number of reasons why there's Article 69D in some cases, and that not every case gets automatic review. It could be judicial economy purposes. Maybe there's too many courts martialed. But we want to leave open the possibility that there can be CCA review of such cases. And I think, Your Honor, it doesn't really make a difference here in the scheme of potential jurisdiction. Where it matters is where a situation like our next, where there wasn't a possibility, where there was a discretionary system in place that the appellant in that case availed himself of, but the key judge under the statutory scheme said no. And then he waived and post-convictions became final before making hay out of it. That is a situation where we can say that Congress has said, sorry, the game is up. But that we are far from that situation here, Your Honor. We are an ongoing court martial, and the authority has the potential even to disapprove one of the findings in the case, this disorderly conduct charge. And I think I do think it's fair to say that we're jumping the gun here by saying that that just because there's a discretionary statute, that the statute shouldn't have any meaning under the All Writs Act.
Counsel, is some of your concern is that you don't want your client to end up like Harness, in other words, to be required to go to TJAG only to have no relief granted and no other avenue of review?
I think, Your Honor, that goes to what the lower court said about the difference between the issue that was properly the basis of the petition for extraordinary relief, the bias judge, versus the merits of it.
Let's talk about the bias judge issue.
Yes, Your Honor. And I think, Your Honor, that the petitioner in this case, he really wanted to have a fair judge preside over his hearing. Certainly in the writ, he wanted also the court to consider issues that would be beyond the scope of. But that's neither here nor there as far as this court and this issue is concerned. As this court held in Hassan, where there's an ongoing court martial and you have a biased military judge, that is the proper basis for a petition for extraordinary relief. And that's as far as the lower court went in exercising careful restraint over and making sure that they weren't getting into the issues that...
I understand. But initially, was that your concern is that you didn't want to have, or your client didn't want to have to go to the TJAG with this very important issue only to get no relief and find himself at the end of the review line?
I think, Your Honor, I wasn't part of the trial proceeding.
I understand. I know.
And it has, whenever there's petitions that, are not ripe for extraordinary review, I can understand how the court would view it that way. But I do think, for purposes here, regardless of whether there was a concern by First Sergeant Brown that his case would never be reviewed, the point is the lower court properly found it could be reviewed, now only on one issue, and not beyond that. And I think that's why we have to look at what the lower court did. It's not a usurpation of its statutory authority, but rather a careful exercise of the precedent here and interpreting the All Writs Act by its own terms.
So what's the concern by requiring him to go to wait for the military judge to come back with his ruling, wait for the CCA to issue its ruling, or actually not the CCA, wait for the CA to issue his ruling, and then go to the TJAG and wait for a ruling from the TJAG? Why not let that process play out?
I think, Your Honor, for a number of reasons. So
because of the nature of this particular kind of an issue?
Yes, Your Honor. That's certainly one of them. I mean, we have a judge who, again, by his own terms, admitted that it made him uncomfortable when counsel, he didn't say that it made him uncomfortable that counsel tried to have him recused, but he admitted it made him uncomfortable. And that's a problem, certainly from the appearance of fairness perspective.
But that's what I'm concerned about, is you're muddling the line between the sense of fairness as compared to what the statute says. We're not in the fairness business. We're in the business of following the legislation that was passed by Congress. So getting back to the point that Judge Maggs made, without getting into the facts and the fairness and so forth, why isn't the government correct to say that based on this statutory scheme, the wisdom of it is not for us to question, that the ability to go to the CCA is extinguished at the time that there is a sub-jurisdictional sentence imposed, and it is not revived statutorily until a step we can differ over what the appropriate triggering event might be But I think we would agree that there was no triggering event here, if you're accepting of the government's position. Why are we not simply focusing on that?
Your Honor, because the All Writs Act by itself says that courts created by Congress shall have the authority.
The All Writs Act doesn't expand jurisdiction. That's behind every citation of the All Writs Act.
It is, Your Honor. But the point is, again, going to Powell, where we have this court saying that the All Writs Act gives us potential jurisdiction to review a case that has not come before us but may. I mean, there was nothing, the government,
the All Writs Act doesn't give us anything except the power to issue writs. If we've got the power, or the CCA's got the power, it's in the code. It's in 66 and 69. So, you can talk about the All Writs Act all day, but that's not the point.
That's right, Your Honor. And I bring that up just to show the All Writs Act has been considered to be sort of a gap filler. Where Congress
will want,
it's a gap filler, Your Honor, to cover situations that are not explicitly provided for by statute. One of the cases cited in the government's brief was the Pennsylvania Board of Corrections case in the 80s by the Supreme Court. And I think more on point, though, in E, B, and H, B, so we have situations where this court has talked about, where Congress has not specifically talked about the situation, as was the case in Article 6B, that Brian brought up. That would be a case.
I think Ornette says Congress has spoken to the situation, and you need a trigger, and there's no trigger here.
Well, it's what I was going to say, Chief Justice, was that Congress has spoken to the issue, but it has in the sense of the All Writs Act and vis-a-vis Article 69. And I do think, Your Honor,
I think your argument is surreal, but it's basically that this is a bad situation, and 66 and 69 really don't provide jurisdiction, but we ought to do something. Well, as Judge Olson made the point, we're not in the do-something business. We're in the business of interpreting the statute, and I'm not at all sure the statute can be interpreted that way. And I'm not talking about the All Writs Act. I'm talking about the operative statutes, Article 66 and 69.
And I think, Your Honor, I think the point is, this is where I think we part ways, that this case is still possibly under the purview of Article 66 review. I mean, if there is a mistrial declared, so let's just start with, for the sake of argument right now, that this case would get Article 69 review. Let's focus on the possibility that there could be Article 66 review. I mean, there can be, Your Honor, because the idea is that when there's a mistrial declared, I mean, there could be a follow-on review of the same charges. I mean, the charges are not, they're withdrawn, but they're not dismissed. So you still have a situation where you have preferred charges, the same court-martial. It's a different court-martial.
It's a different court-martial.
But you have the same, and I guess this hasn't really been brought up in a specific case, but I cited a couple in my brief where this court has said it's a continuation of the prior court-martial. And I think that, in that sense, Your Honor, because the charges are withdrawn, we have a quote-unquote different court-martial, so I misspoke. It's a continuation of the same court-martial, though all the same. And so if that were to happen in this case, and let's say the military judge, as he said he would, review the entire record before giving rulings in the case, I came to the conclusion that he erred when it came to not giving a mistake of fact instruction. I mean, there is precedent for saying that he could declare a mistrial at that point. And so in that situation, then, we're left with a similar procedural posture that we had in cases like, LRM and Hassan, where we don't know, the case could get 66 review eventually. The point is, as I said at the outset, the government is jumping the gun here by saying that we can already determine whether this case will get particular jurisdiction when we're still in an ongoing court-martial where there's evidentiary rulings that need to be ruled on.
Is your argument based solely on the potential of a mistrial as opposed to the potential of review being granted under Article 69?
No, it is not limited to Article 66, Your Honor. It's also focusing on Article 69. And there, I mean, we have a statutory scheme that puts in place the right for an accused to ask the PJAG to send the case forward. Now, it's also important to note that it's not even just petitioning PJAG. We've been talking about that as if it's the only way the case can come forward. There's a situation where his case goes to CCA just to a sponte, so to speak. If it gets 64 reviewed by the judge advocate, and there's a disagreement with the general court-martial convening authority on how to resolve that, it goes to the TJAG. TJAG could simply say, I don't want to deal with this. I'm going to send this to the CCA and have them review the entire case. So, I mean, there's multiple avenues. It's not to be thought of, Article 69, Your Honor, as a scheme that is this for want of a nail situation. It's in place because there are situations where even cases that don't get that automatic threshold can be in place. And I think the government's rule also would provide, I see that my time is up. May I conclude?
Please complete your answer.
And I was going to say that there are situations where there are problems that arise even after the case is over. And in a situation like that, even if the case is sub-jurisdictional, I hate to use that word, but even though the case does not require automatic review, the case could still come before the CCA. And as long as that possibility is on the table, this court may entertain the petition for extraordinary relief. Thank you.
Thank you. Government have rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor. I would just like to take a very brief moment. As several of the cases that are cited in the lower court's opinion were discussed by my colleague, I just want to make sure that we distinguish why the government thinks that those are of little moment to the analysis before this court, which is the statutory construction. First, Major Hassan was facing, in addition to other charges, 13 specifications of Article 118.1. Certainly a jurisdictional potential sentence possibility was alive at the time of the extraordinary writ. An LRM, it was a 120 case, which similarly could result in a qualifying sentence under 66. Booker the same, and Howell, of course, had a 9-year sentence. The government's position, to be very clear and very brief, is that 66 and 69 are very different. 66, there is a potential path where the charge sheet could produce a sentence that qualifies for the mandatory review under Article 66. Under Article 69, there has to be an executive action. The case has to be sent to the court in order for there to be a jurisdictional creation event.
Counsel, on that specific point, even in a case like Hassan, you would need to have a triggering event like the sentence. I mean, he might have been acquitted, or he might have gotten a sub-jurisdictional sentence. And how is that different? I mean, that's an unknown triggering event that must occur before there's 66 review. How is that different from this unknown event that must occur before we have an Article 69 review?
So, Your Honor, the potential is there for a qualifying sentence. And in short, that's the answer to Your Honor's question, is that the potential under 66B, again, accepting that the doctrine exists, the government don't question the actions of the doctrine. So because of that charge sheet's ability, in Major Hassan's case, to have the potential to create 66 review, we believe that potential is there. However, once an event takes place, like a sub-jurisdictional sentence, that possibility no longer exists under Article 66, Your Honor. Judicial duty is not less fitly performed by declining ungranted jurisdiction than in exercising firmly that which the Constitution and the laws confer. The lower court's decision should be vacated. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Court thanks counsel for both sides. Case is now submitted. Court is in recess till 09:30 tomorrow morning.